You know this episode's going to be a family edition when the two fucking cousins wear the same sweater, not even planned. Yes, sir. What's up, Chris?
Not too much, you?
No, not much. It's a brand new episode of the Curfew Boys, the fucking family feud edition. Sammy with Chris. Unfortunately, the other boys are, some are MIA, one's off duty, one's on daddy duty, and one doesn't know where he is. So it's just me and you, buddy. So
it's going to be a fun one.
It's going to be a fun one.
Let's try to disagree a little bit more. Give people something to listen to.
Well, it's funny you say that because we've had one listener that sent us a link on his Twitter page about the fucking taxes.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's like it's everybody was right. I was right. You were right. That whole fucking debate about it.
There were fragmented truths.
It's just the problem with my marshmallow of a brain is that I can't fully retain information. Like I have to read it either a couple of times because like when I read it once, it depends because half the time I'm just reading just words and the information is not registering and permanently sitting in the brain. So it's just, but yeah, like I said, it was a funny conversation. The one guy's like, because about your latest episode, go to my page and I pinned the tweet about the taxes. And so it all comes down to the same thing. And this particular article was about John Tavares saying that he gets to save money because he's still an American resident, but he's Canadian playing in Toronto. And like, even though Quebec taxes are the highest in the league, like Ontario taxes are not far behind. They're off by maybe, I think, like 1.5%, give or take two. But apparently, like, he saves money by filing his taxes as an American citizen. I don't know if it's in the state of New York, and even though, like, he doesn't have to pay the full federal, provincial taxes anyways. But it's super interesting. But,
It's crazy what kind of financial wisdom these guys have access to, nevertheless.
Well, you would hope they do. You would hope that their accountant is fucking good. You would hope that they're not getting screwed over by whatever accountant, financial advisor they have, etc. Because not to get into this whole debate about it, but at one point, like, Chris Pronger came on Twitter and kept tweeting that, like, yeah, we make millions of dollars, but sometimes some of us were getting these millionaire contracts at such a young age that, you know, we don't know exactly what to do with them. We get a financial advisor that, you know, we think we can trust. Some of them have screwed players over, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's so much more that goes into it, but it's a whole other world to begin with. The fact that the professional athletes making millions, but like just the fact that the whole, just how you crunch the numbers together within their domain when the numbers are above 6-7 figures, it's a crazy thought.
Think of it like this, like especially Carey, like you take a contract like Carey Price, this guy is making like 400-450,000 nearly every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. If it's distributed over a year, not even the season, over the season, I could only imagine if it was a shorter period of time, but like 450,000 every 2 weeks, put that into perspective with a lot of people who are, you know, making anywhere between 1500, maybe 2500 every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's insane. Like it's a world that we can't even comprehend
but talking about Price's contract, I think his base salary is just a million, and the rest is in signing bonuses. Really? Now, yeah. So go on capfriendly.com and you can actually go on the breakdown of his contract.
Okay.
And going back to the whole taxes debate, well, not debate, like that was the discussion that we were having. I don't know if signing bonuses I would think they would have to file some of that money within their taxes, but I thought I read somewhere that they don't take into account the signing bonuses and performance bonuses, et cetera, et cetera. So it's something I got to look into, and you just made me think of it when you were talking about Price's contract. But
It's amazing that there's so much to talk about in the hockey world, and we're talking about taxes
dude,
and
it's no, but no, but like when we say it's a business, like it's an actual fucking business and beyond. Like what we see on the ice is literally the tip of the iceberg. There's the whole business of coaching a team, managing a team, just the players themselves, how they manage themselves and how they have to perform to get the money they want. There's just so many layers that goes on into a professional hockey team that we don't even have a fucking clue. Like nobody here does, unless you're actually in it.
Know the Sebastian Maniscalco skit when he's talking about Chipotle or wherever? Chicken. What is this? It's like,
Dude.
it's no, think about it. It was just the
Oh.
chicken that got me. It's like chicken, nap time, game prep. It's they have their routines, and like I could only imagine. Yeah, it's crazy.
Speaking of Chipotle, okay, this is gonna open up to the fucking All-Star weekend that just passed. I'm gonna ask you this question, Chris, to any of the Curfew Boys listening, to all of our listeners and those that are watching here on YouTube. Was this year's All-Star weekend a success or a fail? I don't know if I mean I could start. I watched both. I had nothing to do on a Friday night and a Saturday night, a Saturday afternoon. Kind of wanted to do my homework on this. Oh man, you know what? I'm gonna fuck. I don't want to trash the NHL because I love the game of hockey, but like, holy fuck, they gotta fucking do something about it. It's a gimmick. I know we discussed this a little bit before in our last episode, but this was before the All-Star skills competition and the game itself. And everything we're saying is practically on par, man. It's
On par. That freaking golf thing was garbage. It's an insult
pun
to
intended. And so it, dude, the fucking what's it called here? Hold on a sec. I have it here on fucking Instagram. I purposely kept the Instagram page open. The pitch and puck, the pitch and puck skills competition. I get it. You know, it's Florida. They're probably known for their golf courses. I don't know. I've only played golf once. Fun to play. Players love playing it. A lot of people, I see people on Instagram, they're going to play golf. It looks like literally a fun time. But man, compared to the game of hockey, like, listen, I don't mean to offend anybody out there, but watching golf is fucking boring enough as it is. Like, do we really have to put these NHL stars on there and let alone put our captain, Nick Suzuki, through that fucking tournament, to that competition, and to and you want to make matters worse, put the fucking cherry on top. Not only does he win the competition, he wins a fucking free year supply of Chipotle. Breaking news, there's no Chipotle in Montreal. Fuck it. While they're on the road, yeah, free Chipotle on me, boys. Let's go. Oh my God, what an embarrassment.
Listen, there are so many things that you, so many points that you brought up. I'm going to try to remember them all as I go through them.
Oh my God.
Number one, as an adult hockey fan, like in all the years, like towards the end of elementary school where you could really start getting into hockey, you really start comprehending the whole
It's
dynamic of it.
what happened to me. Yes, absolutely.
Most like, as a young kid, you can't grasp everything, but at that point, usually at that point in time, the diehard hockey fans are born, and that's when you come into your own. Since that age, let's say since the fifth, sixth grade, beginning of high school, this was the first time that I actually didn't even tune into the All-Star game live or the skills competition live. I actually watched maybe a handful of highlights to be able to discuss it, simply for the point of being able to talk about it on the podcast. But it was, it's just, call me, call, say that I'm discriminating against what it is in the modern day, but I don't like the changes that have been made. I don't like the vibe to it. I don't like the lack of competition and, you know, pride that these guys and the two associations, the East and West Association, used to carry into this weekend. So that's one thing. Like, it just doesn't have that buzz. It doesn't have that competitive edge. And for that reason, if they're not competing and they're going out there, like, you know, even it was beautiful to see Roberto Luongo back out there.
It was cool. I mean, he made his career in Florida. Sure. Yeah, I was okay with that.
It's fun to see Luongo, and I have no problem like talking about that whole competitive edge and the entertainment aspect of it. But, you know, it's not fun. It's really just not fun to see goalies. These are the best goalies in the world. You want to see them making the best saves, and they're practically diving the other direction so that pucks go in. Like, I understand that they're not warmed up. There's an inability to be making the crazy saves when they're barely. Or like, you know, they don't want to risk injury. So completely understandable. But it's just there's such a lack of compete. And it's like a grouping of the best players. If there's any moment in time that you'd like to see them competing at their very best, it would be then and there. But anyways,
I totally agree on that. But what was that fucking that competition where the goalie has to try to score from the back of his net, and if he misses in certain distances, like it's either a 2-on-0 or a 3-on-0, and he's got to try stuff. I don't know what the fuck they tried doing. What was the competition called? The Tendy Tandem. That was a fail. Like those, and not just that. In between competitions, like, there was no momentum. Like you said, there was no emotion. There was no. The vibe was so slow. And
we're talking about like the second part that I actually wanted to talk about was the whole golf element. The fact that they broke away and it was literally like a pause in the middle of it all.
You're replacing it with a sport that's not the most exciting sport to watch. Like, let's be honest. Okay. Here.
This is where we have a difference of perspective. I actually love playing golf.
I'm saying watching. I can't do it. I can't watch golf for more than 5 minutes.
Okay. I'm going to bring in my perspective. Playing golf, I was never able to even, you know, endure 5 seconds worth of golf on TSN or whatever sports network. I literally couldn't tolerate it. It was horrible. Since starting to play it, I have to give it credit. I tip my hat. It's amazing to see what these guys are capable of. The consistency when you have one of your shots that's going off into the woods or into the freaking lake or whatever man-made body of water. You know, there's a certain appreciation watching these guys and going like, holy crap. And the other element that's actually fun, apparently, and I've actually tuned into a handful of things of golf. It's amazing that it's just action shot after action shot after action shot. There are very few commercials in golf. I'm not here to defend golf. I just want to give you the other perspective. Golf is an amazing sport.
I know, but I'm comparing it to the game of hockey. Like what we're used to seeing when it comes to hockey, even the skills competition. You're looking at the fastest skater, the target practice. You were timed that you had to show your hand skills competition, like deke the puck through cones and you know do slaloms around cones as well, the skate backwards with it. Like, they didn't even have that this year. I thought they would. So I'm just saying, like, the momentum of watching a golf game versus a hockey game, it's completely different. The pace is on a whole different level.
That's what I wanted to conclude on. Golf is a beautiful sport, and there's a lot to enjoy in watching it. But do not put a professional hockey player. I don't want to see hockey players playing golf. I want to see hockey players performing at what they do best, which is playing hockey. So I don't. I understand. You know, maybe a little again tip of the hat towards a sport that a lot of these guys enjoy, but it had no part. Had absolutely no part in the All-Star game.
So,
did you like one last thing before we move on? Did you see Tyson Barrie go up against Connor McDavid in practice? for there was a skating drill. Okay, I'm going to try to find the video. I'll send it to you, but I'll give a brief breakdown. They had half of the guys from the Oilers on either side of the ice, and what they had to do, they had to skate around the circle in the, let's say, defensive zone, and they had to skate around it, and then they cut back into the middle of the ice and they skated the other way down the ice. And the Edmonton Oilers were going 1v1, and Barry obviously saw that he was going up against McDavid, and he's already joking and laughing and saying like, "What the hell? Like, I'm gonna lose," you know, because he's going up against one of the fastest players. That in itself, practice, Edmonton Oilers practice, a skating, like, I don't want to say like just a skating practice overall, was more entertaining than a goddamn like several events at an all-star competition. And that in itself is wrong. That is just wrong.
So I'm wanting to believe they brought in that whole golf competition as an ode to Florida, you know, where they go. I assume that's where players go to play golf sometimes. But they also had the surf, the slap and surf competition too, which I didn't mind actually. I actually thought it was pretty. I thought it was a lot more entertaining than the fucking golf competition. I actually liked it. You know, there was like target practice. They had to hit down the surfboards, and then, you know, they had a player in the fucking the water bucket square. You know, if you hit the target, the player drops in the water. Like I thought that was okay. Like it wasn't my favorite, but I didn't hate it as much as I didn't dislike it. Hate's a strong word. Or I didn't dislike it as much as the golf competition. Like that part I liked, but like, man, I enjoyed watching the classic ones, the fastest skater, the hardest slap shot, which, dude, like I Ovechkin and Elias Pettersson were the top contenders at one point. It's like it shows there's no more Shea Weber. It shows there's no more fucking Zdeno Chara. Like this is who we're like Elias Pettersson won. I love Elias Pettersson as a player, but I see him more as a fucking dangerous like sniper with a wrist shot than a slap shot. But hey, good for him. He won. I didn't think Svechnikov was gonna win fastest skater, but he won. I mean, Cale Makar blew a fucking tire, and McDavid made it known that no, he doesn't want to just be in the skating competition. He wanted to, you know, show he has other talents. And dude, he fucking destroyed
Targets.
the target. Like that was awesome. And the best ones were the classic ones.
Well, but that's the funny thing, Sam. Think about it this way. You're talking about the classics. You know what would make it so amazing that they have the classics year after year after year? It's in that sense, you get to actually compare different eras of hockey. When guys were picking off, let's say, the target practice, when guys were picking off the targets, they went 4 for 4. The targets are the same size. The nets are the same size. Everything's the same. Maybe, okay, look, there's an evolution in the stick technology, and you know the players are supposedly getting better. When you have classic competitions that are no different, the rink is the same size. Who skates faster in this era? Who skated fast in that era? It makes it that much more fun. And year after year, you get the same comparables rather than, I'm sorry to say, it seems as though they're tending to children. They're making it more childish. It's hard for the older population, the older fans to watch.
And I'm happy to say that, and I'm all for, you know, you want the kids to have a good time too, but it's like show respect to the fans that have been here for decades, you know, that have been here, that I've watched, that I've probably seen Guy Lafleur and Bobby Orr play, that I've watched Wayne Gretzky and the Oilers as a dynasty, or even the Islanders. You know, they've at least those that have been watching from the 70s, the 80s, and up till now, like show a bit of respect towards them too, I think. That's my personal belief on that. When it comes to the All-Star skills competition, like I know there's only so much they can do, and I know they're trying it to create like an ode to the city that they're doing. But Jesus fucking Christ, this is Florida. They have a hard time selling tickets to their own home team. Did you look? Did you look in the AHL in the minors? The All-Star game was in Laval.
They had a Ferris wheel outside Place Belle.
Dude, full house, And crowd going nuts, doing the wave. The players, the goalie was doing the wave with them when it was going around him. Like, the crowd went nuts. Like, you would think, you would think this was an NHL All-Star game, just how the fans were in it. Now, granted, I get it. Tickets are not as expensive as an NHL All-Star competition or game. But, like, Jesus Christ, this is nothing to say that the Montreal Canadiens market or the Quebec market is a lot better than it is. But that's not my point. My point is that, like, for fuck's sakes, like, the minor league All-Star game probably had a bit more of a success rate than the NHL did. Dude, Twitter went fucking ape shit on the NHL. People lost their minds on. Did you see Trevor Zegras, what he tweeted?
Yeah, it was a sleeping emoji.
The sleeping emoji. Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's like, it's not good, man. And not only that, to make matters even worse, didn't like a day or two ago before the All-Star weekend, the stats came out that viewers in America have dropped like quite a bit in the States. Like more than 20 or 30%, I believe. If memory, I have to go find the stats, but I just
there are certain things, you know, I'm not even going to bring up, but let's just say there's a lot of ruckus, there's a lot of noise for you think Philadelphia Flyers warm up. Let's leave it at that. There's a lot of
and
political views that are being influenced within the game currently, and you know. If there's one thing, look, having my mom living down in the States, having family down in the States, being very familiar. I mean, people in Louisiana are not necessarily watching hockey, but on the whole, have a lot of contacts down in the States, and they are very sensitive to their political issues. And anyways,
but it could be. This is not about what political beliefs you should believe in, like. Whatever, we're not going to go down that, but like, does that have a part to play? Yeah, maybe. I mean, we can't be close-minded, but I think on the overall, it's just the NHL's marketing department, fucking clean house, man. Like, clean house. Like, this can't continue that way. And the worst part is, like, you have Gary Bettman saying our game is not in trouble. There's nothing wrong. It's like, and I get it. He's not supposed to say or outline on TV if what the problems are that are lying in the NHL. But like, just like, I don't know. Just don't be arrogant with your fucking bobblehead. And like, I don't know if he has a condition. I'm sorry, but like, don't be arrogant being like, there's nothing wrong with our game and making it sound like you don't have to change anything. It's like, you know what I mean? It's so funny. On our last episode, we were saying how we wanted to bring back the old playoff format, 1-8. Fucking the star of the fucking the past, my God, almost 15, going to be 20 years soon, Sidney Crosby said it. The NHL needs to bring back the 1-8 playoff format. I hope Gary Bettman listens to, you know, to, you know, the player, the one of the top two players that, you know, brought hockey in America on the map, like after Gretzky did in the 90s.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, so anyways, look, that was the All-Star competition. The All-Star game itself, I didn't dislike it as much as the skills competition. Now, I didn't get to watch the two Western divisions play against each other because I fucking ran into car trouble. Because if you do live in Quebec, and if you've lived in Quebec, maybe 4 or 5 days ago, minus 40 will hit you in the fucking nuts if you're a guy or whatever you are. Like, it'll hit you badly. Okay, men or women, your nipples would have been so hard you could cut fucking glass. That's how cold it was. So my car battery died. So during the game, thank God I had the girlfriend's car. Went to Canadian Tire. I didn't go buy a battery, but I went to buy a fucking booster cables. So I was able to get the car started, boosted, and then I was able to watch the Atlantic versus the Metropolitan Division. I thought it was a bit of an entertaining game.
I think the games, look, the game of hockey, you can't really screw it up. It's there's so much to enjoy, and even if the players are not pushing 100%, they're you know, they were good. I have to. I just have to. I'm sorry. I'm going to sidetrack a little bit. Maddie C Sports for you and me, shout out, because the day that it was super cold on the weekend, he made a video. He's driving and he's just going, what are you stupid people wearing no clothes? How the hell are you going out in this temperature? I wish, Maddie, I wish you were up here in Montreal. Oh, I would have loved to see your reaction. I would have loved to see his reaction with the freaking cold weather over here. Because
he would have fucking, man, like, even us as Canadians, we're used to the cold, but not like this, not minus fucking 40. Jesus Christ. But all that to say is, man, like, for sure, Matthew Tkachuk was going to put on a show. You know, he's the hometown boy. I thought Barkov was a bit quiet, but Matthew and Brady, the Tkachuk brothers, they had fun. Dylan Larkin was like, nah, fuck it. I'm going to fucking go. He was the only one putting in like 100%. And there's rumors circulating that Pat Brisson was there with him trying to see either negotiate contracts or see if he could get a trade somewhere. So I don't know if Larkin was showcasing himself, but watching Nick Suzuki making plays with Mitch Marner and David Pastrnak was awkward as fuck. But still, you know, like, if you put the hatred of the Bruins and the Leafs aside, like, it was still pretty pretty cool hockey to watch. You know, I thought the Atlantic Division guys, like, apparently they were pushing each other. Yeah, let's go win this. You know, they took it a bit seriously. I loved watching Ovechkin and Crosby play together. They showed that they're still the fucking the best players in the world. Like they really couldn't have said it better. Like, McDavid, McKinnon, they're for sure, they're up there. But Crosby, Ovechkin, man, the ages of 35, 36, they're still schooling these guys at their age. It was sick to watch. As a diehard hockey fan, I fucking loved it.
Well, that's exactly the thing. These guys, especially Crosby and Ovechkin, I have a soft spot for them. They 100%. Literally changed the game, and they did so for such a long time. And that's why, yeah, sure, McDavid, Matthews, McKinnon, you know, you guys or these guys have, you know, all signs are pointing to them having very successful, very entertaining, fantastic careers all around. But Crosby and Ovechkin, not only did they do it, they did it for the 15 years. Will these other guys be able to do it? Not necessarily. And like I said, Crosby and Ovechkin, they rewrote the game. You think about the games in the playoffs, three, like, both of them getting hat tricks, you know, the buildings going crazy.
That was that
was our childhood. And those guys, they shifted hockey. Those were the two, like, really the two names. After Gretzky retired, after Lemieux retired, after, you know, you had the Messiers, the Lindros, the Sakic, after they retired,
Eisenman,
those were the names that replaced them. And to 100%, this day,
100%,
there's nobody else. Again, those other guys that I mentioned, currently dominating the league, very young, many years ahead of them. They have the opportunity to make that name for themselves, but. Mm-hmm. We have to see it. They're not there yet. So, anyways,
no, but I totally agree. And like, and I thought it was cute, cool, whatever, that Ovechkin brought in his son, and the three of them, Ovi Jr. and Crosby, were doing that little breakaway challenge with Luongo. Like, we're gonna see Ovechkin's son in the NHL. And like, how old is he? He's got to be give another 15 years or whatever.
Four or five, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Give it another 14, 15 years. We're gonna see him play in the NHL. So, look, man, on the overall, then, you know, like, just the way the All-Star weekend happened, debates and debates and debates all over Twitter, all over, you know, social media. You know, everybody giving their own opinion or suggestions on how to make the All-Star game better. The majority of people said bring back that lottery draft, or that the fantasy draft method that they did in I wonder if it was in 2011 or 2012
when Phil Kessel got picked last.
Yeah, exactly. He was like that, like felt like that one fucking kid at school that's the last one picked, because most of the times, because nobody thinks he's good enough or doesn't like. But anyways, it was that one.
I so, yeah, so, agree,
some,
yeah.
Someone was suggesting you bring that back. I mean, Yeah, maybe. I mean, why not? But it's again, it's all about, for me, like I said, like the 3-on-3 is entertaining, but you know, bring in more players, because it was just weird how is it that like Mika Zibanejad's not there? I understand Panarin was there, but how is it Mika Zibanejad wasn't there? How is it that Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand aren't there either? Yeah, like, you know what I mean? They're missing players.
Well, we went over it. It's also contribution or not participation more from every single team. So they have to kind of split it up. But, you know, when you were saying certain things, like players aside, injuries aside, you know, I think a lot of these guys might also get a free pass because they are a little bit older. And I think teams kind of request or ask the league, hey, please, do you mind giving our guys? We'll happily give you Pasternak. We'll happily give you, like, you know, Fox and Shesterkin.
Yeah, Shesterkin was there too. That's true. Panarin was
there too. So they had three. But anyways, just to say, I think some of the older players get a little bit protected. You know, Crosby and Ovechkin, they're healthy. There's no reason that they can't participate, and they are rightfully so the best players on their team. Sure. So, I mean, they should have been there. But you know, as you were talking about the competitions and kind of what we brought up before about the classic events being like a timeless sort of thing, you know, what might give these guys a little bit of an incentive to actually come and perform for the skills competition? Imagine they brought back, and listen up, NHL marketing department, imagine they bring back all the old school challenges. Every single one of the players, maybe they have less events, but every single one, or maybe like 50% of the players, like, you're not going to put a defenseman, let's say, for a shooting competition. I'm just throwing something out there. You can put a defenseman for a shooting competition, Raymond Bourque or whatever. Basically, the guys who you identify as the best shooters, the best skaters, everybody gets a chance. There are the NHL records that are set for time, for speed, for shot power, for whatever. And if they break the record, they win. They actually win some sort of money, or they win some sort of, you know, something like that.
At one point, there used to be prizes. Like, some of them want a Jeep.
but that's the thing. Could you imagine? You say, okay, if you beat the NHL record of the there's a prize for winning the record for the year, but there's another prize for setting the individual breaking maybe the NHL record, like a ridiculous prize. So these guys
give them something to fight for. It's like we said in our last episode, the team, the Eastern Conference, you bring back the East versus West, the Eastern Conference wins, they get home ice advantage in the Stanley Cup finals.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the best ways to go about it.
I think that is the way to go about it, because in the words of Michel Therrien, just to conclude the All-Star stuff, I've never seen something soft like this soft.
Oh boy, the Canadiens! My God, I'm going through with fucking withdrawals, man. Like, I don't know when's the last time they had over a week and a half break. Like, it's nuts.
It's long. I even miss them losing. You know, the nights are the nights are long. The nights are long. The evenings are long, and
they're on the break right now. They're going to be back. They're going to be back Saturday afternoon. Well, it's going to be Super Bowl weekend. So who do you have on Super Bowl to win it?
Chiefs.
You have the Chiefs. Okay, I think Chiefs. It's going to be an interesting game. But Cole Caulfield got his surgery. It seemed to have been a success. He looks to be in good spirit and all that. But I'm bringing up Cole Caulfield because we're seeing guys like Bo Horvat getting their contract. We're seeing guys like Dylan Cousins getting his contract. What does that do for Cole Caulfield? Dylan Cousins got 7 years, 8 years, $7.1 million. Bo Horvat, you know, after that trade, you know, my God, we could talk about the trade of Bo Horvat. Like, how do you trade a guy like Sean Monahan after that? You know, Bo Horvat got that contract, 8 years for $8 million.
Well, the advantage for that is that one centerman came off the market.
Yeah.
So in a certain sense, there's less stock. There are less players to actually go get. So Monahan's value might go up. But I really like, honestly, bringing up Bo Horvat is the perfect way of putting it, because I genuinely believe him making it's $8.5 million for 8 years.
Yeah.
That guy
Yeah,
is a
something like that,
very
yeah.
good goal scorer, and
Absolutely.
he has similar numbers to Cole Caulfield, and on top of that, he's a centerman.
Yeah.
I think Caulfield's going to land anywhere between the 8 to 8.5 region. Even Dylan Cousins, he got in the $7 million
Yeah, 7.1.
Dollar range.
Yeah, 7.1.
But again, centerman, you have to pay centerman, or there's a tendency for centerman to get paid a little bit more. So
yeah,
I see with confidence he'll be smacked down right in between those two contracts, and it's nice to see.
I think so too. And again, like if you give him the 8.5, I think it's perfect. Anything more than that, but again, you give him that, but like you got to give it to him for like 8 years as well. You gotta avoid that bridge deal as long as that happens. But also, dude, there's continuous trade rumors surrounding the Canadiens. Now, the latest thing I've heard, the two latest things, I guess, within the past 48 hours, we've all heard, at least, is that Kent Hughes does not want to trade Josh Anderson, does not want to get rid of him unless the offer is that he can't refuse. We're going to go Godfather style here. Unless he gets an offer that he can't refuse, I think Josh Anderson stays, and I get that. And I get why teams want him. Dude, he's a playoff player. Like, he's the type of game he brings. Any playoff contending team will be glad to have this guy.
Completely agree.
And the rumors are that Calgary wants him. And I understand why. Calgary wants him, because if they're going to go up against the Edmonton Oilers and stuff like that, they're going to need that fucking grit. They're going to need that guy to bring in the speed of the offensive zone, knowing that Edmonton's defensive core is not that they suck, but they need to get better.
Yeah.
And that leads to my other rumor, or the other rumors, that Edmonton is probably looking for a left-handed defenseman. You might have a guy like Joel Edmondson available. Stanley Cup champion, playoff experience, grit. Someone that they'll give you a couple of cross checks in the back and won't get a penalty for it. So, and you can add another team to that. Apparently, the LA Kings are looking for a defenseman as well.
Well, even more so that they had their eye in particular on Joel Edmondson. Who was it? It was Pierre LeBrun who came out.
It was Pierre LeBrun. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He came out and he said LA, and look, I love Joel Edmondson. This guy was one of the pillars on the back end going to the Cup final. I think he'd be a great acquisition for a lot of teams.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that his injury has not scared teams off or reduced his value significantly on the market.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I think Edmondson makes a lot of sense. I almost hope for Edmondson's sake that he goes to Edmonton. His family's around there. He wanted to go back west, closer to home, especially after the loss of his father. So, you know, on a personal note, I'm just saying I hope that Edmondson can go to Edmonton. I'd love to see the Oilers actually perform and have a lot of playoff success, to be honest with you. You know, kind of shades, I want to say shades of Gretzky. I think Edmonton suffered for a very long time. And as much as Sammy, I know we don't see eye to eye. You want the Montreal Canadiens to be the next Canadian winner of the Stanley Cup.
I really do.
I would not mind seeing Edmonton winning. I'd love to see McDavid lift the cup.
It's more for him.
I'd really like.
It's more for him and Dreisaitl more than anything. Like, I'd be more happy for those two.
Well, that's you know, the best players win the cup, and I think those guys McDavid is a special, special player. That guy has to win a cup before the end of his time.
But do you think it's going to happen in Edmonton, though?
That I don't know. Well, it's all going to depend. If Edmonton gets their shit together and they go and get proper defensemen and a proper goalie that they haven't fucking done in years, and everybody, including the fucking sixth graders who are starting to get into hockey, can identify that they have those needs. I don't understand what's taking so long. It's like Mark Bergevin saying, oh, we can't find a centerman. We can't find a centerman. Fuck, Ken Hughes comes. Centerman, centerman, centerman. I mean, there's no excuse for Edmonton to continue missing key pieces in goaltending and a handful, maybe one or two defensemen. Mm-hmm.
Well, look, like, I mean, please. Yeah. Well, I think if they get themselves a defenseman like Joel Edmondson or whoever else is on the market, I think they'll be content with the goaltenders they have now compared to last year. Like Jack Campbell and Stuart Skinner is a big upgrade compared to Mike Smith and Koskinen from last year. Like that was absolutely a disaster. So, but I'm also here thinking that like there's some of these teams like I'm going to throw in Pittsburgh in there too, because you know they're probably going to try to go. There's rumors that they're going to probably try to go get the Timo Myers from San Jose. And, you know, I'm looking at those teams. Who knows if even, like, the Boston Bruins try to go get someone? Because a lot of these teams, I feel like they're going through that Michael Jordan, the last dance mode entering these playoffs. Boston, I think Boston is one of them. You could say L.A. is kind of one of them, you know, with Anze Kopitar and Drew Doughty, Jonathan Quick. You know, they're slowly like dying down.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, I think, is more or less the same thing. You know, Crosby, Malkin, Letang, they're not going to be there forever. They don't have that much. They don't have that many seasons left in them. So it's going to be real interesting to see where these teams go. Like we're less than a month away from trade deadline on March 3rd.
Look, I'm going to save my piece with Los Angeles Kings. I think they're not in there, but the Boston Bruins and the Pittsburgh Penguins, like Boston Bruins, I've heard a handful of, or I've come across a handful, whether or not they're viable sources or whatnot, they're, you know, you'll see a blow up on Twitter, Chychrun from the Coyotes. Apparently the Bruins are in on him. The Penguins, I've heard many names. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting deadline. I think there are going to be a lot of teams betting on a lot of different players. I'm hoping, you know, maybe this is coming from, again, a very hopeful stance, but I'm hoping we see a very aggressive trade deadline where a lot of different teams, but that's the feel of it, especially in the East. I feel as though a lot of teams can be in the run, or a lot of teams are on very similar levels. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, it's, who's going to get the key pieces that will allow them to advance to the next rounds? And I'm hoping there's a bidding war. And Boston, I swear to God, if Boston gets somebody like Chychrun, they're going to be a scary bunch. Dude,
if Boston gets somebody like fucking Patrick Kane, which I don't know if they can, salary cap, if they get a guy like Patrick Kane, like I'm going to punch the glass right here.
But didn't Patrick Kane openly pick like two teams?
He's got a no move. I know he has a no move clause. Or is it modified? No, I have to go check on Cap Friendly. But I know is that he's going to make a decision within the week, deciding if he wants to stay in Chicago or if he wants to get traded. So here, real quick, Patrick Kane, he's got a no movement clause. And so does Jonathan Toews, you know, and there's rumors circling about Toews, you know, maybe going to Winnipeg, which is, I think it's his hometown, right?
Yes. He grew up there. I'm just
His birthplace is Winnipeg. Yeah. You know, some are saying that maybe, I don't see this happening, but some are thinking that maybe Kane goes to Buffalo, you know, where he's from. And I don't really see that happening either.
In the offseason. After.
Oh, maybe.
After
maybe at the end of his contract. Probably. I mean, why not? He's won his three cups. He could play with Tage Thompson, Dylan Cousins too. He's got Dahlin there. He's got Owen Power over there.
He's going to be a great veteran for all those young players.
Oh, absolutely. You said something key here, and you're hoping for an aggressive trade deadline. And I think Habs fans are hoping for the same thing regarding our team. You know what? The more and more the games go on and as we get closer, like, yeah, I understand the rumors regarding Anderson and Edmondson. It's, you know, it's one of those like where there's smoke, there's fire. But aside from those two, add in a Sean Monahan for now. I'm expecting just those three to be moved. I'm not expecting Mike Hoffman to get moved. I'm not expecting Dvorak to get moved. Apparently, on who was it? The Gauthier on LDS. Denis Gauthier on LDS saying there's no demand for Drouin. There's no demand for Dadonov. I don't think he's going to trade Paul Byron's contract. There's no point. You know what I mean? Like, so here's, I've been thinking about this not all day, but like a good part of my day. It's like, I'm expecting him to move one of those three, either Anderson, Edmondson, or Monahan. Like, I know they said he doesn't want to touch Anderson, but I also believe that it's a bit of a bait too. Like, if you really want this guy, you need to give us something. Like, a first round draft pick, it ain't going to cut it. Like, you got to give us a first, either one of your top prospects, or either a first, a second round, and maybe a minor league player. Like, the offer has to, you know, they always say it's got to make sense for the Canadians. Gentu says it has to make sense for him. But yeah, I could see Edmondson going for a first round pick. Just if we could trade Sherrod for a first round pick, I'm sure we could trade Edmondson. And look, Bo Horvat, me too, I have trouble saying his fucking name. He's off the market now. Like, who are the other centermen that are available? Like,
well, it's Taze. Taze is one of them. And
yeah, but again, him too. He's got a big ass fucking contract at 10. Well, mind you, the only way the salary cap gets affected is as of that day. Whatever's remaining for the team to pay will get transferred onto that team's. But that's the technicalities of it. But apart from those three, Chris, I don't know. Here's the thing. I don't think he's going to make a surprise trade out of nowhere. I don't think he will. But if he does, it wouldn't surprise me.
You know, I really love those points. And it's sad. Like, I'm saying it's sad that I have to agree, because as time went forward, I'm getting more and more of an underwhelming expectation expectations all around for the trade deadline for the Montreal Canadiens. I'm going to give two perspectives. There were too many injuries. Sean Monahan, who was one of the key assets, stayed out too long. Second element was, in the absence of certain players, I have to say Josh Anderson really stepped up and gave them a viable reason to keep him. Mm-hmm. And again, yeah, maybe they'll trade him, but it's Josh Anderson, funny enough, will be the most valuable piece at the trade deadline if there is a team that's willing to pay as much as he's worth. But when it comes to Edmondson and Monahan, like you said, those are the two, I think, key number one, like one, two key pieces to trade away. Their injuries have affected them so much, and I think that they've affected their value so much that my expectations going into the trade deadline, we might be looking at second, even third round. I mean, third round pick is maybe an exaggeration, but second round picks for these guys. And then if you're talking about Hoffman, Drouin, I'm sorry to say, I don't see this guy going anywhere unless it's for like a third round pick. Seriously.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know what? If you get a third round pick, it's sad to say that might not be a steal, but because right now, like if I were another NHL GM, I'd be like, no, I'm giving you a fourth. You a fourth. And you know what? I'll throw in a minor league player that could be like a bit Nate Schnarr, when they got Nate Schnarr from the Devils for what's the goalie for the Hamburglar. Yeah, Hammond. Andrew Hammond for Nate Schnarr. You know, Nate Schnarr, he's good for Laval, but I don't think he's ever gonna make his way up. To the NHL. But like that, that's to me. Like if we mention names like Drouin and like Dadonov, like you're getting a minor league player at best. I don't even think it's worth trying to get a draft pick out of them for them.
I think it's exactly that. Like, those guys are going to be, give us a player to help Laval make a nice deep playoff run. Other than that, we're not getting anything. The only name that's kind of like an in between, and I don't know 100%, You know, I've heard Mike Hoffman's name popping up for Vegas. Maybe Vegas. And don't expect much. Don't expect much. But Mike Hoffman maybe going to a place like Las Vegas again. Not a huge return, I think we'll just be happy to see some of these guys go. That's the sad reality. I think there's a lot of frustration that's accumulated for a lot of these guys. And, you know, it sounds stupid, but it's almost going to be gratifying for some of us to be seeing some of these players going.
Well, it's unfortunate, but unfortunately, you got to get rid of the dead weight. It's funny you mentioned Vegas, because now with Mark Stone out for... They're saying he should be back to make the playoffs, and that's if they make the playoffs. They're not out of it, but that could be interesting. And now I'm thinking like, fuck, Mark Stone is out. They might try to pursue Timo Meyers also. Like, this is a guy, he's got 30 goals. He's replacing Mark Stone. And if they make the playoffs, Mark Stone comes back. They're stacked, man, with a healthy Eichel. I'm just saying.
Oh yeah, and you want to know, this was a point that I actually wanted to bring up. I forgot, because there's, especially when it comes to trades, there's so many things to bring up. But I'm gonna throw you a figurative situation, and you're a GM. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're a GM of one of the teams. Yeah. Okay, especially in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
What happens when one of your competitors? Okay, one of your competitors ends up getting Timo Meyers, then another one ends up getting maybe a Patrick Kane. Then another one, like, you have one or two, let's say, teams. All I'm trying to get at is, do you think there's a possibility that there's a snowball effect that's going to drag other, especially in the Eastern Conference,
mm-hmm.
also in the Western Conference? Like, you look at the Canadian teams. Do you think, like, I'm looking at it and I'm saying there's a huge opportunity for a snowball effect that just, you know, it just blows up, because other teams getting better will literally drag in competition in terms of the trade deadline and going out and making acquisitions. So what's going to be interesting is if there is an aggressive push in the morning, that might drag a whole shit ton of teams into a very, very active day.
It could, but you got the thing about some of these teams is that, like, you don't want to pick up a contract that still has term. Or at least, we throw Joel Edmondson's name out there because he's got, I think he's got, if he has, if he doesn't have,
two.
He's got a two, but at 2.3 million, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. I apologize. My mistake. He's got 1 year left after this year at 3.5. That's okay. You could afford that. Now the salary cap is going up 1 million next year. So, like, in theory, you're accumulating a 2.5 out of that. Just for my shitty fucking math knowledge that I have here. Is Mike Hoffman worth grabbing him for another year at 4 million? Teams gotta be aware of that. So like every year, majority of these players that are going to be heading out as rentals are the ones that their contracts are coming to an end. Number one, but number two, if these teams are going to pick them up, they want to make sure they sign them, like Bo Horvat. If the team is going to pick, like, let's say, if Pittsburgh picks up Timo Meyers, okay.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm looking at right now, he's making $6 million. He's also a restricted free agent with arbitration option. Like, if a team like Pittsburgh is going to pick him up, they also have to consider, are they able to sign him next year? They got quite a few. They, like, you know, if, like, right now, if I'm looking at their lineup, they have Jason Zucker. That's a UFA. And right now he's making $5.5 million. He's 31 years old right now. Like, if they free up, if they, you know what I mean? They could free up that. They could free up maybe a defenseman. But, like, them too, like Brian Dumoulin making 4.1, but, like, are they able to sign, you know, Timo Meier after that? If they get rid of Tristan Jarry's contract as well, they free up another 3.5. You know what I mean? Like, if they're going to trade for him, if they're going to get rid of a first-round pick for him, like Pittsburgh, they're going to probably go all in. But they're going to also have to consider, are we able to sign this guy next year? Because they're going to, you know what I mean? Like, I'm looking at, I'm going to give one more example, though. I'm going to throw Vegas in there. Like, fuck, they're up against the cap just as bad as we are, as the Canadians are. So, yeah. Like, I don't know if they could afford Timo Meier next year. You know, we talk for about, this is for Vegas, dude.
Vegas, though, I was like, cutting in because Vegas, like you said, I do not know how the fuck they've been getting by, like with the amount of star power on that team, with the amount of players with huge contracts. I don't see him. I don't see any sort of possibility. But for Pittsburgh, on the contrary, they've always ran with Crosby, Malkin, Letang, or Letang. Mm-hmm. Those are the three. They are okay. As long as those three are there, and I would see them like there's kind of a cycle in Pittsburgh, don't you find? They go through like the James Neal type player, then they have the Rust, then they have it's whoever can play and perform with Crosby and Malkin.
Well, that's why Rust, no pun intended, but he's rusty. Like Rust is rusty. Like he's not scoring as much as he should. So that's why. I'm sorry to cut you off, Chris. I just thought of a team. I want to put money on it. I want to bet and put money on it that they're going to land Timo Meyers. I'll give you a hint. Max Pacioretty's season is done.
Oh, yeah. If Carolina goes ahead and pushes for him. But what do they have to offer? What do they have to...
I think Carolina is willing to go all in because I consider them as contenders. They have the cap space. If they have to give a first round pick and, you know, maybe throw in a conditional third round pick, they could give in Flyers. Carolina's third round pick or the Phillies. Anyways, sorry, I'm just reading
that's
up on
why,
something.
That's why this trade deadline is madness. You have Carolina, you have Boston, you have Tampa Bay, you have Toronto, you have the New York Rangers to a certain degree. You have the Pittsburgh Penguins. That's six teams right there that any one, obviously there are certain teams that are maybe a little bit more favored to go a little bit deeper, but nevertheless, those are six teams that could very well surprise and could very well go all the way in the playoffs and come trade deadline. Like, holy shit, what could we witness at trade deadline? Like, I'm not even excited for the Montreal. Okay, I'm excited for the Montreal.
But what is going to happen for these other teams? I agree. Like, I want this to be an exciting trade because we haven't had an exciting – actually, that's not true. For the Canadians, we've had an exciting trade deadline last year. You know, I don't think – not that's just trading Toffoli, but, like, you know, he made quite some awesome acquisitions. Can't use, but
– Thank you, Ben Sherrod.
I couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe that. But, look, it's – what are we? We're February 8th, man. We just got, like, 3 weeks left. Like this month,
thank God cannot, it's the shortest month.
It is a shortest month, but yet it cannot come fast enough. I want to move on to our final topic. There's a couple of Habs prospects that we got to talk about because they're playing so well that it's impossible to ignore at this point. Three prospects I want to bring up. I want to bring up Sean Farrell from Harvard. I want to bring up Lane Hudson from Boston University. And listen, whether you like it or not, I got to bring up Logan Mailloux. Have you seen Logan Mailloux's hat trick goal?
He made a Michigan move.
So
he's a defenseman. That's the thing. It's a defenseman pulling the Michigan for his hat trick.
That sentence combined in a hockey game does not make any sense. It just doesn't. So he's at 17 goals now. I know I know the London Knights are playing against Kitchener, Philip Massar, who got a goal. I haven't checked. I haven't gotten the update on the score sheets, but right now, as last I checked, Mailloux has 17 goals. In like 36 games. PK Subban highest number of goals in the OHL was 15. Like, guys like Alex Pietrangelo only had one season close to 20 goals. Guys like Drew Doughty only had one season of 15. I think Drew Doughty also had 20 goals once. I did some research, and I'm asking not just you, Chris, but to anybody out there listening, who was the last Montreal Canadiens defenseman prospect to score 20 goals in the OHL? And I just said PK Subban, the highest he got was 15. I don't think you'll ever get it.
It might even predate me being a hockey fan, to be honest.
It could be. This was the 2009, 2010.
Oh, no.
He wore number 68 at one point.
It was Yannick Weber.
There you go. Yannick Weber it was in like recent years. I've checked. He scored 20 goals one year. I even forgot which team he was with, but he scored 20 goals. Like, Mayu's already at 17. And I'm talking about 20 goals. Yannick Weber, however the fuck you pronounce the name, at like a full OHL season. Mayu's only played 36 games.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, folks, you gotta consider that this kid is actually a lot better than what we thought. I'm going to give you a bit of an insight. One of my colleagues, Chris, he played, I think he, I don't think he got drafted in the Quebec Major Juniors, but I think he's played a couple of games. He was good enough to play at that caliber. And unfortunately, like, injuries, he fucking blew his knee and forget it. He plays in a league where Vincent Lecavalier from time to time plays with them. Like, this is how like good this guy is. You know, they talk. Vincent Lecavalier said, "Don't be surprised if Logan Mailloux makes the Montreal Canadiens next year." It's like, don't be surprised, because this kid is a fucking beast.
Yep.
I'm just saying, folks, this is something to, you know, think about. Like, I can't tell people what to think, what to feel, even though I do that 99% of the time. But look, man, I think Mailloux is a lot more skilled than we think. And if that shit doesn't happen, I think he gets drafted higher than where he did in his draft.
We've said it before. Logan Mailloux was set to be the best defenseman in the draft, in that particular draft. And it was stated openly. Logan Mailloux did that stupid shit on his end. But Christ, I mean, I'm not justifying.
No, but we're just talking about the kid in terms of the hockey perspective. Like, this kid's got talent, man. Like, he's got moves, dude. Like, he can deke, he can skate. Like, does he have the best defensive game? No. Does he have to work on that? Yes. But aside from a first overall pick, I can't think of a player where their game is so perfect that, you know what I mean? Everybody, every prospect, they have some aspect of their game to work on. If Mailloux is on the defensive end, fine. We could live with that. But he's got offensive abilities, man. Like,
think about a defensive guy, a more defensive guy like Jack Eye, even though he puts up goals here and there. Think about him playing with a more defensive guy like Jack Eye. And number two,
mm-hmm.
Logan Mailloux is a beast of a human being. Like, strength wise, he's
massive.
He's playing with boys. It's like a man playing with boys in London. I mean, I think that might be, like, obviously that's contributing to him performing the way he's doing. Like, he outskates. He's as big. He's even bigger than me, or just as big as me. I'm like 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah,
220 plus, like, or 215-ish pounds. I don't know what it is exactly, but he's a big kid and he skates like the wind. He's got such a powerful stride. You know, This guy has Brent Burns written all over him.
Dude, 100%. 100%. Oh my God.
Like
100%.
That defensive maybe lapse, maybe not the best. But this guy, like, again, going back to thinking about him playing on a pairing with Jack Eye, they would murder anybody who got into the defensive zone. Like, murder. Like, they're done. You're finished. You're skating into the Montreal Canadiens zone with those two on defense. You're done. By the way, I sent you the clip. I have to say, did you see the it was Mark Stahl was on the Spin Chicklets podcast, and it was Whitney who had actually he shared a little anecdote as to what Jack Eye said to him while he was playing. This is Mark Stahl. Mark Stahl is like, oh yeah, they were talking about not having tough guys in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Stahl said, I went into the corner and I was kind of locked up with Jack Eye. And Jack Eye, he turned and he says, you have 3 seconds to let go of me. And Mark Stahl, apparently Mark Stahl's reaction was like, shit, bud. Like, okay, like I'll go.
So,
again, he just said he's a tough
no, motherfucker. Dude,
but it's just, like, we love Jack Eye too much.
No, but this is a fucking big fuck you to these trolls that come on our Curfew Boys Instagram post about Jack Eye saying that he's nothing, he's this, he's that, let him fight Lucic. Like, people are still bringing up Milan Lucic's name. Did you see Lucic doing fuck all when Jacob Trouba destroyed Kadri? Where was Lucic? He was hiding in a fucking corner. For those who think that Milan Lucic is still significant, oh, fucking wake up, make yourself a nice fucking cup of Folgers coffee, because you fucking need it there, bud. Milan Lucic, really? I could understand Ryan Reeves. If Jack Eye fights Ryan Reeves, I think Jack Eye's, I think he could catch a beating. That's fair to say. Ryan Reeves, he's the heavyweight of the league. Milan Lucic, really? Fuck, Jack Eye's got to get by that fucking nose of his in order to line up. Like, stop it with Milan Lucic is going to take on. Fuck, they played them a couple of times. Where was Lucic? Fucking hiding in a corner. Lucic has a history of picking on guys he knows he's going to win. Mike Komisarek. Shut the fuck up with your Milan. Milan Lucic is going to beat Arbor Jack Eye. You're out of your fucking nugget. Anyways, all that.
Back to you, Logan Mayu.
No, but hold on a sec. Just, I'm rewinding one more step. The Spitting Chicklets. So apparently Suzuki was on it. I didn't have the time to see it, but he said, because at one point Jack Eye and Chris Weidman were paired, and I don't know who I don't know who was going after Weidman. This is Suzuki explaining to the boys on Spitting Chicklets. He goes, I don't know who's, I don't remember who was going after Weidman, but one guy was like, oh, what the fuck are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? And Weidman was like, me? Oh, nothing. I got a partner that was gonna beat the shit out of you if you don't stop. But this is coming from the haters that chances are know nothing about hockey. Do you people need to understand that a player like Arbor Jack Eye's size and skill and grit and toughness, like, dude, general managers, for the male general managers out there, they would give their left nut to fucking have a guy like Arbor Jack on their team, let alone go to the playoffs. When this team makes the playoffs, I don't care if there's a lack of experience here, but Arbor Jack Eye and Caden Gooley, they fought to go to the Memorial Cup. So they know what it takes to fucking win something. When the stakes are high, they know what it takes to win. It doesn't matter if it's the junior league or the professional league. They have that experience of trying to fight for something meaningful and to win it all. Dude, like, Jack Eye is going to be deadly in the playoffs. If you think Austin Matthews is going to smile while he's getting fucking punched in the back of the head by Sherratt, like, dude, Jack Eye is going to murder him. I'm just giving Matthews an example because that's our recent playoff performance. But holy fuck, though.
But that's the thing. You look at Ben Sherratt. Ben Sherratt could barely even fight. Once in a while, he dropped the glove, but he usually got dropped. But that's the thing. Arbor Jack Eye is us, and he's getting that. He has that reputation. He's not getting that reputation. He already has that reputation. He's a scary motherfucker. He's a scary guy. Do you see him walk into the league, walk into the arena when he parts? He looks like the goddamn Undertaker. He's coming in a black suit and
he's just like a 22-year-old kid that we're looking at him like he's a fucking god. But anyways, all that to say is that like I could see a Logan Mayu Arbor Jack Eye maybe pairing one day. And you know what? We're gonna talk about Lane Hudson right now. Lane Hudson could be the quarterback of one power play unit, and I think Mayu could be a quarterback of the second power play unit.
Something to
think about, like something to imagine. Lane Hudson is breaking records in the NCAA. Like this kid, as a freshman, 18 years old, 36 points for a defenseman. He's got more points than Caulfield. No, that's not true. Caulfield had 35 goals in his last season in Wisconsin. But dude, like the last guys to do this were Adam Fox and the Luke Hughes. I saw a stat. Like he might beat their record if he keeps going this way.
And you know what? There are a lot of hockey writers that are coming out and they're saying it more and more. Lane Hudson could have very well been one of the top three, if not the number one overall pick in last year's draft. Like seriously, especially because we know he had that illness. We know that, you know, he had a little bit of, I think it was a bone, an illness within the bones. But he's already over that. He got past it. And then you want to bring in his performances right now. His performances are almost never before seen. And he's doing, you just watch his highlights. His highlights pop up on Twitter all the time. It's because they're highlight reel, like insanity. It's insanity what he's able to do.
12 points in his last five games, man. 12 points in his last five. I understand he's not scoring that many goals. His highlight playmaking ability, though, is insane. It's insane. Like, and he grew. He's 5'10 now. He went from 5'8 to 5'10. I think he's reached the highest he's supposed to be. I don't know if they said 5'11, but dude, like, he's only 18 years old, and he still has he has another year to go, man, in the NCAA. And if he destroys next year, oh, get ready for that contract offer.
But I want to also specify having Lane Hudson on defenseman, a short guy. Like, I don't. There's no fucking problem. There's no. For once, the Montreal Canadiens, especially on the back end, they're colossal. They're gigantic. It's actually going to be maybe refreshing to have a very small guy who can skate. And he's not even very small, but just a smaller guy who can skate very well. So I think we're also looking at a question of time. The Montreal Canadiens will not be bitching and complaining about having a small team.
I'll talk about the next player, like Sean Farrell for Harvard. Him too, okay, man. Like, he is, you know, like man, like, I'm like, we obviously love Cole Caulfield, and I think we're all gonna love Sean Farrell, what he's capable of doing. But like him too, he's in the fucking zone, this kid too, man. I don't know if you've seen the latest highlights of Harvard in the Beanpot tournament. So the Beanpot tournament, for those who don't know, it's the American college teams within the Boston area.
Boston region.
The Boston region. So you got Harvard, you got Northeastern that Jaden Struble played in, the team that Jordan Harris was captain last year. What did I say? I said Harvard, Northeastern. You have Boston University, that's Lane Hudson's team, and then you have Boston College. So right now it's the finals. It should be in the next couple of days, is Harvard versus Northeastern. And Sean Farrell just fucking, he's done it all. He's proven to everyone that he's ready to go pro. Already he's the age, 21. He's getting physically mature. It shows in his game, like, the level of smart this kid has and the playmaking ability is absolutely amazing. And if I'm looking at his stats here, like, him too, like, in his last five games, 9 points. In his last 10 games, 16 points. He's got a total of, where is he right now? Him too, he's got 36 points in 23 games. Him and Hudson, they're if I'm not mistaken, in terms of stats, points per game, they're 2 and 3 behind Adam Fantilli.
Small name there.
Just say, who knows? Maybe potential Habs prospect. You know, I'm just can you imagine the Canadians draft Fantilli in the NCAA? The top three goal scorers are the top three point guys are Habs prospects. Fantilli, Sean Farrell, Lane Hudson.
Good night.
Yeah. Thank you and good night. There go out. It's despite everything going on with the Canadians right now as we speak, I think the fan base, if they're smart like us, if they're smart like me and you, you know, I want to throw in Anthony, Joey sometimes in there. Adrian Zook are very smart. Anthony and Joey have their moments. I'm just kidding. If majority of Habs fans can be smart, like no joke, like look at the team the way we do, it's very difficult to not be dialed in. And I would like to think majority of them are. They know what's going on. They know the bigger picture. They still go to the games because of those reasons. It's very difficult to not get excited for the future.
I completely agree. And I know we didn't cover too much with Sean Farrell, but he reminds me very much of a particular player of ours.
Currently?
Yeah. Yeah, his style of play actually reminds me very much of one player, a very prominent player with the Montreal Canadiens.
Is it injured or still playing?
No, he's still playing.
Are you talking about Cole?
No.
No? Who's he remind you? Well, I mean, his playmaking abilities. I mean, I think he could have sick playmaking abilities like Suzuki. There you go.
That's the guy that I have in mind. He just, I'm not saying he's a carbon copy. I'm not saying he's the same guy. I'm just saying the way he sees the play and the way that he can distribute the puck. Those are two of Suzuki's best aspects
Yeah, I totally agree. It's not just that. And again, like I go back to when I went and see the prospect camp, the Canadians, just before training camp happened. You had all the prospects there. Like everybody was there to see Slafkovský and even Massar. But then they saw who Lane Hudson, they got a glimpse of Lane Hudson, and everybody got a hard on, including me. But I kept my this is going to sound weird now following. I paid close attention, or I kept my eye. I was focusing on Sean Farrell. It sounds weird actually following up. But anyways, no, dude, this kid, he's smart, not in terms of his vision of making of his playmaking abilities, but it's his positioning, knowing where to go when you don't have the puck. And that's something that you could teach. Yes. You could teach that over time, but if a player naturally has that, he's gonna make the big leagues. And sometimes, you know, we differentiate between a minor league player and an NHL player. A lot of guys in the minors, they could skate, they could shoot, they could hit. It's just minor details of knowing where to be at the right time, knowing when to give a pass at the right time. It's details like that. And I think Sean Farrell, I think he has that. I think he's definitely going pro next year. And they said it, like, we're very much going to be looking into offering. There's a strong possibility that we offer him a contract at the end of his NCAA. The kid's done it all. 2 years in Harvard, over 100 points with the Chicago Steel in the USHL. An Olympic player for Team USA. Went to the World Hockey Championships, and he was one of the best players of that team. Like on the you're going to the Olympic Games, you have 6 points in 4 games with the United States of America. And I understand there was no NHLers there, but still, you have 6 points in 4 games at the Olympics. This kid's done it all at the World Championships. Him too, 6 points in 10 games. Like, kid's ready, man. He's ready. Yeah. And you know what? I'm not even expecting him to start the season with the Canadiens. I'm not. I'm expecting him to go to Laval, get a taste for the pro. Because if he goes there, if Joshua Roy goes there, if Riley Kidney goes there, if Philip Massar goes there, who scored two goals, by the way, against Logan Mailloux. Mailloux got an assist, by the way, on the game-winning goal. Didn't score, but he got an assist. Like, unfortunately, Mailloux, he's too young to go to the minors. You have to either turn 20 within that season, or you have to be 21. But if these prospects, though, if they go to Laval, I might be buying a few Laval Rocket tickets. I'm just saying. So that's pretty much it. I don't know if you have anything else to add, but
no. Look, we did a solid hour and 20 minutes. So I think people have enough to listen to. We don't want to get them too tired of our voices yet. We want to continue a few years from now.
I work in the morning. Fuck.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Early shift.
Yeah. 7:30. That's okay. Anyways, it's all right. It's not too far from my place. But all that to say is, look, my God, the Canadians are back at practice till Thursday morning. So, yeah, are we going to hear news that Drouin and Armia are back? Is Monahan going to be back? Those are three big question marks. If they do come back, do you send Raphael Harvey-Pinard to the minors? It's going to be interesting, though. I think we're all excited for the guys to be back. We've been having a bit of a withdrawal, but Saturday, the New York Islanders at the Bell Center, a matinee game or an afternoon game, 12:30. And then on Super Bowl Sunday, the Edmonton Oilers, Connor McDavid and Draisaitl are in town for another game at 12:30. Should be a fun weekend. Super Bowl's around the corner. I think I'd like to see the Chiefs to win real quick. You know what? This is for Anthony. Maybe Patrick Mahomes is the next Tom Brady. But yeah, so we'll see. It's going to be a fun weekend.
Yeah, Chiefs got the Chiefs winning. I'm hoping that the Canadians actually do not do what they usually do on the Super Bowl weekend. Usually,
and win. They have a good weekend. It's true. They have a good record.
So I'm hoping that they don't continue that for at least this year. Again, let's tank. So we'll see. It'll just be nice to see them back in action and hoping for the best.
But look, Vancouver is tied with us, but surpassed us in the standings. San Jose is 1 point behind us. So. But I'm real quick, I have the Vancouver game on right now. They're down 3-2 against the Rangers, so we'll see. But yeah, we'll wrap this up. To the listeners and viewers, thanks so much for tuning in. Please like and subscribe to our YouTube channels. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. We'll be back probably next week. You know, enjoy the games, enjoy the Super Bowl, folks. Chris, thanks for joining me. Family Feud edition or just family edition to the other boys, wherever you are, whatever the fuck you guys are doing. Don't be strangers, huh? Show your faces once in a while. We love you. But thanks, Chris. See you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Until next time. Bye now.
Bye now.
Good night.